welcome to the Bloodstream Podcast. Today is Thursday, March 19th, 2020. I'm Patrick James Lynch.
And I'm Natalie Lynch.
In just a little while, I'll be joined by National Hemophilia Foundation COO Don Rodolini, as well as hematologist Dr. Robert Sidonio, to find out from each of them how they and their institutions are responding to coronavirus and COVID-19. But first, Natalie and I have a little time to talk to you. You're surviving. You're listening to this, so I assume you are anyway. How is your coronavirus COVID-19 experience treating you? Are you socially distancing yourself from the rest of the world? Are you self-quarantined in your favorite room of choice? Have you already binged your favorite television show multiple times? Well, worry not. Natalie and I are here to give you some ideas of how you might spend next week during coronavirus lockdown 2020. So Natalie, what are some of the things that you have been doing to keep yourself amused and occupied and connected to other people?
I've been on social media a lot this week, more than normal, and just kind of putting things out there and getting great responses from everyone. I asked everyone to show me art they created, and I got pictures that kids drew, paintings that adults did, someone wrote a poem.
Oh, nice.
And then people like questioned things that they did, being like, does this count as art? And I thought that was interesting.
You know, what?
Cooking, gardening.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I like that question.
Yeah, just, you know, does this count as art? And I think, yeah, it does. And I think making time in your day to do something that's creative or, you know, that maybe that you just want to do and you never have the time to do.
Right, something that's outside your routine. You know, you famously many, many years ago started a book club that yada, yada, yada eventually led to you and I meeting each other amongst many other things. But that's not the only book club that you've now started, is it?
No. So I also put it out there to see if anyone wanted to read a book with me and have a book club in two Sundays. So on the 29th, I'll be hosting an online book club for Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Okay.
And I got a lot of responses. Like, people had this book in their bookshelf and they dusted it off and they're joining. Some people are downloading it. They were like, oh, does listening to it count? Read it, listen to it, and join on the 29th.
Where are you doing this?
I haven't figured that out yet. But if you follow me on Facebook, there is a thread. And I don't know, it might be a Zoom, might be a Google Hangout, might be on Facebook. You know, I haven't figured out that part, but I will not let people down. I did start it the other night, but I'm not that far into it yet.
Okay, and it's Nathalie Rose, the French spelling with a TH, Rose is the last name if you want to track her down and join the book club for, what is it? Zen and the Art of Motorcycle?
Maintenance.
Maintenance.
Yes.
Great. Well, in a couple days, you are headed back to work for the airline industry.
Yes. One of the industries that has yet to shut down.
Yeah, and like sort of can't, I don't think. Slash, if they did, that feels like as big, that would feel as sort of jarring to me as anything that's happened so far, maybe even more so than like the NBA shutting down as the first big national organization.
Yeah, we rely so much on air travel here in the United States because we're so spread out. So,
right.
You know, in Europe, there's the rail and there's, you know, you can drive from country to country.
That's a good point. We are even more dependent upon it than other countries that are of much smaller size.
I
didn't even think about it from that perspective.
Because getting in the car in other countries, you can, you know, easily get to family that lives across the country. It's, you know, a several day trip and not necessarily easy to make, especially if someone needs you immediately for some reason. And, you know, people are still, you know, I hate to say it, but people are still dying.
And they're still living life.
My dad went to a wake the other day and he was like, it's really like hard not to hug mourning people. And that was like conundrum, you know?
Yeah. And I was talking to mom yesterday. My mom's a nurse in a hospital in Queens. And she found out yesterday that she might be transferred from her clinic where she's been for the last 16 years back to one of the floors of the hospital. And she's pretty stressed about that. She hasn't been on one of the floors in over 16 years, and she's north of 60 and feels out of practice with a lot of what's expected. So there's just so much anxiety and unknown. And yeah, I never thought about hugging a mourner. Like, I never thought my mom might be reallocated to go back working on a floor. I think every day there's just new things that, oh, didn't think that was ever going to happen or didn't know to expect this change.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, and those of us who still have to, you know, there's still some people who have to show up to their office job who are not working remotely.
Well, your mom.
And
tell people about your mom.
My mom is a paramedic for the Cleveland Clinic, and she's, you know, pulling 12-hour shifts doing testing, and it's drive-through testing out in tents, so she's outside, and it's not particularly warm in Cleveland right now, and, you know, just testing as many people as possible who show symptoms, and it also keeps people who are showing symptoms out of the hospital, so, you know, someone who's in there with a broken leg isn't necessarily going to be, you know, exposed to, right, to someone with COVID-19 symptoms. But yeah, she's working really, really hard right now, and I'm really thankful.
A really nice post about her, which people responded to really energetically. I'm sure she loved that.
Yeah, and she sent a picture of her in her getup. She's got the face shield on and a mask, and I, you know, she has a regular mask. I think her ER was ravaged. Someone stole the masks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and your mom had mentioned that someone had robbed a truck of masks. So, yeah, you know, people are still being people and
yes, they are
doing dumb stuff. But, you know, and it's unfortunate that you'd steal masks from the people who are trying to help
right,
people.
Right. Well.
You know, but it happens. Speaking of working from home, I started a Facebook thread this afternoon asking people to post, you know, and I can't take credit for it. I did see it elsewhere and I adopted it, but asking for people to post pictures of their kids, their animals, their spouses, their roommates, and, you know, everyone's now in close quarters. So, you know, there's people who are, you know, salespeople who are now taking sales calls from home,
yeah,
you know, babies on lap. And so I said, you know, post pictures of those who are at home and tell me what your coworker did today. So replace their name with coworker.
Okay.
I've gotten some pretty hilarious responses.
Like what?
I mean,
going to the phone.
I know. One of my friends posted a very, very cute picture of her daughter who had stole her glasses while she was working on the computer. And there's this 18-month-old in these huge glasses.
Nice.
And yeah, I don't know. I don't have the post in front of me, but people are getting pretty funny talking about the laziness of their coworkers, sending pictures of their kids watching TV. And, you know, I said that, well, that should be reported to HR immediately.
What was the one that you put up?
I said, this morning my coworker licked my feet for nearly a half hour while I was working on my computer. And I said, I'm referring to Russell, not Patrick. So, you know.
Wonka, wonka, wonka. I don't know what that sound was. That was like between.
I liked it.
I made it up.
But yeah, so, you know, if you need a laugh, it's pretty funny and a lot of cuteness.
I was actually just about to say I've found it funny when I listen to some of my favorite podcasts and everybody's now recording from home. So like their baby or their dog or their background, and you hear them in the beginning, just, you know, excuse me if you hear my baby in the background. I was about to mention that as I heard the giant garbage truck outside start its maneuvering. So pardon if you hear the giant garbage truck outside as we too are recording this from the comfort of our own home.
Yeah. And you know, there's just people are putting aside, you know, formalities, and it, I was about to say, stuff's getting real.
Stuff is getting real.
Yeah.
Well, Natalie, thank you for joining us. Thanks for what you're doing online to kind of help keep community building and keep people entertained and excited. I think it's awesome that you started a book club. That's a very you thing to do. And stay safe. I'm going to miss you when you're flying around this country in just a couple of days, and going to be thinking about you and hope you're safe out there as this world continues to reveal itself.
I mean, the one good thing is the loads are really low. So, right, you know, there are 40 people on a plane meant for 200. And so people are going to be spread out, and I'm going to be wearing gloves. And, you know, it's not great, but I think it's as good as it can be given the situation.
And,
so,
and you got a book to read in your downtime.
I have a book to read in my downtime. And I also just wanted to mention one other thing. You know, I'm seeing online, you know, people creating these amazing schedules, like homeschool schedules, and, you know, color-coded charts to keep a semblance of routine in their homes. And I think that's amazing, and it's so impressive, and people are really, really, like, doing creative stuff.
I'm sure.
But I also feel like that it might make some people who are not, that isn't their, you know, skills or abilities feel maybe inadequate. And I
right,
think that during this time, if you're doing that, that's great. And if, you know, if you're putting on 14 hours of Elmo, that's also fine. Like, we got to do what we have to do. And shaming ourselves for our productivity or lack thereof during this time is not going to help. So,
no.
You know, we're all doing our best, and I just wanted to tell everyone that I think you're doing your best.
Thanks, Nat.
All right.
Okay, joining me now is the National Hemophilia Foundation's Chief Operating Officer, Dawn Rodolini. Hi, Dawn, how are you?
Hey, great, Patrick. Thanks for inviting me on.
Well, thanks for being here. I think people are curious to know what's going on with other individuals in the community and also curious to know what's going on at NHF. So let's start there. How has NHF responded to the coronavirus?
Yeah, absolutely. So, in so many ways, I think going back a few weeks ago, we were actually pretty proactive in making sure that all of the staff who work in the New York headquarters office were able to and encouraged to work from home. So that's been going back a couple of weeks ago when New York first started to identify that maybe using mass transit every single morning was not the best way to, we didn't even have the term social distancing yet. We started a couple of weeks ago, and then this past week have officially banned all travel for staff and haven't really, just embraced the whole idea of virtual connection and how do we do that and still be able to support our community. How are we able to host events? Do we need to postpone them? Or can we take some of those topics and turn those into webinars or Zoom calls or other ways to support the community without putting anybody, in danger or, exposing them in a way that they shouldn't be?
And where are things in that process? Have you decided to cancel certain meetings? Have you decided to make some of them available as webinars, or is that still all in flux?
Right now it's in flux because our next big event really was the Inhibitor Summit, which is was supposed to be held at the end of May. We are really working closely with the hotel and trying to go through contracts to look at what are the clauses that we never foresaw that we needed, and have very specific language, and working with the host hotels about what does it mean to postpone, what are their availabilities, and then once we get those things in place, then we're going to communicate directly, of course, as fast as possible with the community. So even things like the Bleeding Disorders Conference, which isn't until August, what is our backup plan? How could we take this? And we're starting the discussion now of what can be our plan B if we can't host this. Right now, we're planning to move forward with it, but it's August. We have no idea what's going to be, transpiring over the next month or so.
And what's kept you busy, particularly these last few weeks? How has your workflow changed in the outbreak of corona? What new responsibilities have you found yourself with?
Oh my gosh, my inbox is full of COVID-19 24/7. So as the COO, I really have to put our staff, front and foremost of my concerns for our agency. I oversee HR and IT, in addition to conference and travel services department, and then advancement. So with regard to HR and IT, that's really what we've been doing, is what are the policies that we've had in place that need to be changed to be supportive of staff? What are the technological things that we can do, providing, we're having to order extra laptops for those staff who worked in New York office every single day that didn't have, the capability to work from home before? How do we help support them? And also, how do we help an entire agency feel still connected and not so isolated? Working out of our homes for some of us is really a normal thing. For me, it's been a giant change. I travel every single week. So putting a ban on travel and going in and physically actually having to cancel my flights and my hotel rooms sounds so silly for somebody who goes to an office every single day. But I've realized that psychosocially for me, I was identifying with my value and my worth to NHF by how often I got on an airplane. So that was a new realization and kind of adjusting that. And if I'm feeling that, then what are the staff feeling, right? And how can I support them from an HR standpoint? So we've actually made some real shifts. We've added additional days that are specific to if you are a caregiver of any kind of a dependent, children, the schools are closed. How do you work from home and manage little kids at the same time. How do you, you need flexibility. And so is that working early in the morning, during nap time, after they go to bed at night? You know, we have to be really supportive. And so that's been a huge part of my focus in my job.
You know, Dawn, a number of people, myself included, have expressed some amount of worry about access to their factor or other treatment that they may be taking. Should people be worried about that?
First and foremost, I will tell you, every company has been putting out statements. And if you've missed it, it's easy to miss because I think, I don't know about you, but my phone just blows up constantly now with updates about the coronavirus. And so I think it's easy to miss these things. But the companies, the manufacturers, are all 100% putting their efforts into making sure that supply is not interrupted. I know that the hemophilia treatment centers are doing the same thing. If you get your factor from your HTC or if you get it from a specialty pharmacy, these are all things that I think every single company is dedicating major attention to and resources. Right now, we have not heard about any disruptions in getting the, you know, anybody their factor or their ancillary supplies. So we are absolutely keeping a pulse on that. And we have regular touch-based calls with each and every manufacturer on this. And then also, what can we do at NHF to get the word out, you know, if there would be any kind of an issue? But so far, so good.
The economic impact of this pandemic, we're only just seeing the beginnings of it. And I'm curious to know, from NHF's fundraising and just general viability standpoint, I can't imagine that while businesses and organizations all across the board are being impacted, that NHF is immune to that. I know it's still early, but to what degree are you and others in senior leadership starting to account for that aspect of all this?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the this is in the forefront of every mind, you know, of NHF, but also all of our chapters as well. And you can imagine that we're all very vulnerable because of this. And we were just at, it was our very last event. We just were at, in Dallas, Texas, actually last week. And it was before we banned all travel on Friday. Everyone got home and then we banned travel. But we had all the chapters together. And this was, we actually canceled one session and added this to the topic of how do we deal with COVID-19 and the impact on our financial resources, the impact on how we serve the community, and how do we still make sure that we don't take such a hit right now that we're not there in the future. So a lot of brainstorming has been happening. I have been tuning in to a lot of different organizations out there. The National Health Council has been hosting some webinars. Other nonprofit organizations have been hosting webinars about how to do just this. Like there's, you know, there's all kinds of consultancy firms out there that are hosting free or very low charge webinars. So we're all learning about this together. But we had some great fundraising, virtual fundraising brainstorms last week. Our department, we just had the very first cancellation, which was only 2 days, 3 days before the event, the New York City Half Marathon. You know, suddenly we had just this amazing group of individuals who had been training for a long period of time, fundraising, getting the word out. We'd really been, you know, posting about this. And then, and rightly so, New York City cancels the marathon because obviously that was certainly not social distancing. And first, my heart just broke for these people who have worked so hard to support NHF. But secondly, then the big fear, oh, wow, now it's canceled. And while we had raised some money, a lot of that money comes in at the very last minute. So it's all about communicating, continuing to communicate the mission and focusing on the mission. We need to still be able to serve the bleeding disorders community in every way that they need to be served. And so in order to do this, obviously, it takes money. There have been some chapters that feel almost guilty about continuing with a fundraiser in a time of crisis. And I've had a couple of calls with them, and I really feel like it actually is a good, it's a positive thing to do. It is something that brings us all together and reminds us of mission and of serving the community. And it's okay to say why we need the money and why, instead of doing this face-to-face event, we're now going to move something into virtual, right? And that it's still important to be involved, and it's still important to get the word out.
I know I need to let you get back to answering an onslaught of COVID-19 emails, but before I do, can you just share with the listeners, what are some of the things that you, Dawn, are doing to keep yourself entertained, distracted, escaping from all the seriousness? You mentioned how you're always on the road. Now, having been grounded down, what activities have you found to occupy yourself with?
I've participated in, it's called the Warrior Magic Community, and it's hosted by an executive coach that I've known for quite a while, Jeannie Coomer. And so that's how I'm starting my day every morning. She kicks us all off at 8:30 in the morning, and it is a bunch of women who are executives. And we all just sort of get on this Facebook Live, Jeannie hosts it. We all type in our answers, and it's 30 minutes. She starts off with a lovely meditation and kind of grounding and focusing with positive messaging. That's never been my gig in the past, because I get all of my positive energy from being around other people. And so I found that that's been hugely helpful. The other thing, and I know this is going to sound really hokey and people are going to roll their eyes, but I'm home now and I can consistently every day get on my treadmill. So I'm viewing that as something to do positive for myself and my own health. And so those are the two things that I've been able to add to my schedule. This first week has been a little crazy because this is my first full week home. And I was supposed to be in Montreal this week, actually, with the World Federation of Hemophilia at their gene therapy roundtable conference and other meetings that I had scheduled. And of course, I'm home. I thought I would actually have a little bit more time to sort of sort things, figure things out as we move forward in this new work from home environment. However, I'm finding that every hour of the day is actually taken right now. And I think this will calm down as we move forward. But I think in this first week, people are sort of like, oh my gosh, we need to have this meeting now. And so there's a sense of urgency for, I think, everything that we're doing right now. And I do hope that it calms down a little bit. I think it will, as we adjust to this new normal. But I'm also really talking to people when they say, I really have to get together with you. How about next week? What does next week look like for you? And kind of helping all of us figure out the priorities, where we need to focus our time and energy on. Another really positive thing that has actually come out of this is I have actually cooked dinner in my home every night this week, which never would have happened before. I'm usually only home 1 or 2 days a week. And so that has actually been lovely.
Well, Dawn Rodolini, the Chief Operating Officer of the National Hemophilia Foundation, probably one of the busiest people in bleeding disorders during this outbreak. Thank you so much for giving me and the listeners some of your time. And I hope you enjoy making dinner tonight as well.
Thanks so much, Patrick. I really appreciate you, including me in this. I just wish for everyone the opportunity to carve a little bit of peace out of every day. It's so important for us to stay positive. Maybe limit all of that COVID-19 news to maybe once a day and not let it take over your life. There's a lot of good things that are happening out there, and I just wish everybody safe, and healthy progress in all of this.
Joining me now on the line is Dr. Robert Sidonio, hematologist from Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Dr. Sidonio, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
We were just chatting with Dawn Rodolini at NHF about how her schedule and NHF, of course, has been very much so changed by the course of events. For you, as a hematologist, with as much both in your practice and as someone who's frequently going to meetings and events to do educational seminars, how has your life changed these last few weeks?
Well, it's one of those things I'm known to tell a lot of jokes. And so I was just looking at my Delta status. So my status is definitely not going to be as good as anybody like Guy Young. So I know travels quite a lot, but we're a lot of these meetings, we're doing them virtual. It's made things difficult because I'm not able to have those face-to-face meetings. And as you know, sometimes things have to be done face-to-face. and cannot be done the same as virtual, because we've all done these meetings and we tend to be sidetracked. We might check other websites while we're doing these meetings, and so it's not quite the same interaction. And I do worry that things like clinical research and those important collaborations are going to be minimized in the next few months for obvious reasons. I mean, this is an extraordinary time, obviously. It got really real yesterday when I had to do my ukulele lesson via virtual. It's not the same as being right next to my guy. So the lag time doesn't allow me to play my ukulele as well. So that's when I knew things were real. I mean, Tom Hanks getting COVID-19 was a big deal. And then, you know, yesterday when I had to do my ukulele via Zoom, that made it real for me.
Well, and my joke following yesterday's announcement that Nets basketball player Kevin Durant tested positive for coronavirus, you know, that's the first thing notable in his Nets career. He's got 0 points, 0 assists, 0 rebounds, and coronavirus. That's the Nets resume so far.
Yeah. It's kind of remarkable not having sports around, you know, being in the South, watching ESPN. There's a lot of ESPN Classic going on right now. And, a lot of talk about Tom Brady now, so at least there's some news about sports.
Yeah, good point. There's some big topic to talk about. Well, it's not lost on me that your being in Atlanta is both the home of the NBA, perhaps the largest private corporation to make a big, bold move on what now seems just like a distant memory at this point, but it was only a week ago, as well as the CDC, where almost all of us are turning to daily for at least some amount of updates and information. And on that line of thinking, being in Atlanta, the home of the CDC, do you feel as though there's any buzz or information that's kind of trickling out amongst you and your colleagues and friends and family that maybe doesn't reach the larger country quite as quickly?
I think, you know, with the way things are now and everything's available online, I think part of the problem now versus the last time there was anything close to a pandemic is I feel like we all have access to information, but it's almost too much information.
Right.
Just for example, on our emails, do I need to know what Chuck E. Cheese's policy is in COVID-19? Probably not. Yeah, I mean, we all get those emails. And if you work at a university and you work with multiple institutions, they often have multiple policies. And it's typical for us to get about 20 to 30 emails a day on COVID-19. You know, none of us are going anywhere near the CDC. We are talking to our colleagues there that work in the blood disorders division. And thankfully, we were able to have our MASAC meeting a few weeks ago, which seems like forever ago, since I haven't traveled since then. So the thing I worry about is online, there's almost too much information. And I think that minimizes the actual important information and reliable information. And sometimes I've been disappointed on social media when I even see my physician friends that are posting silly information and sort of myths about viral transmission. And so it's been a little disappointing to be on there. And as you know, being on social media has a lot of benefits, but obviously there are times where you feel very, very disappointed and maybe you don't need to know everybody's thoughts about everything.
Is there a particular piece of misinformation that you've seen over and over that would be worth clarifying for listeners?
Yeah, one of the things I've seen is about this new idea that somehow gargling with salt water and vinegar is going to prevent the transmission of the virus from the back of your throat into your lungs. That's probably the silliest thing I think I've read recently. Clearly, I mean, it does help. You know, that's a nice old-fashioned way of helping a sore throat. But people forget that, you know, viruses can transmit through the gut just as easily. And if it goes into your GI tract, you're just as easily to obtain it that way. And so that doesn't make a difference. You know, the other idea that you can't transmit this in cold and hot climates. We do know that with the warming and the summer coming up, we're hoping that that will reduce the transmission, but this has happened in every single climate all over the world, no matter what time of year it is or what season they're in. This is occurring worldwide, and so clearly it's here to stay. I mean, the biggest thing we're worried about is the utilization of personal protective equipment. So that's the thing that we're most worried about in our hospital right now. So we are having to ration supplies like gloves, you know, things like goggles are being reused and re-sterilized. Nurses are having to use gowns and write their name on it and then hang them up so they can reuse them for the same patient. And the most concerning thing that we have right now, and I think every hospital is dealing with this, is we don't have enough reagents and we don't have enough equipment like the swabs, the very special swabs that you do flu tests with. And we do these viral panels that test for everything but coronavirus, but test for things like adenovirus, things that cause typical viral infections. Some hospitals only have a few hundred of those left right now. And so we're rationing who we're testing. And so that makes it very challenging if you have somebody with a fever and you don't, and you can only offer COVID-19 testing if they have pneumonia or if they're ill. This is going to be a difficult issue later because we're not going to be able to track how this is spreading across the United States. And, you know, places may have physicians get these illnesses and we're not able to test them quickly enough. So that's the concern right now in our hospital.
And I imagine it's near impossible to do too much forecasting at this point because, as you said, we don't yet have our arms around this. We don't know how widespread it is. But I imagine to some degree you have to look ahead a day, a week, maybe 2 weeks. How are those conversations going at the hospital? Is everything day-to-day at this point, or are you able to put in place some amount of forecasting?
Yeah, so we're looking at everything in the hospital. So things like the blood supply is being evaluated. And so patients with blood disorders like sickle cell or thalassemia that have to get regular blood transfusions, we're having to make difficult decisions about deferring some of those or changing the methods of how we do it that reduce the amount of blood product use. Because for a sickle cell patient that's getting something called an exchange to reduce their risk of things like stroke, they may go through 10 units of blood through that. And there are other methods of using less blood that are not as effective. And so hospitals are making that decision. I mean, we have thousands of sickle cell patients in Atlanta. It's one of the largest in the country. It rivals places like Oakland and such. And so so we're having to make those tough decisions because, you know, you can't have these blood drives like you normally do. And so a lot of places are doing local blood drives where the blood stays locally. Things like plasma are frozen, so they're okay for now. And so those are the kind of things we're sort of running up with. And most hospitals have created task force with select physicians that have gotten involved. And that's a full-time job for them. And one of the other things that we're doing in the hospital, some of our older providers, I mean, you know, you probably had some physicians that were pushing 60, 70 that you've taken care of you in your lifetime. And a lot of those were asking, you know, or if they have somebody has severe asthma or other comorbidities, we're asking them to not be on service. And so, for example, I'm going to be covering from somebody that has some comorbidities in tomorrow and Friday. Just because we're trying to protect those as needed.
For you personally, Dr. Sidonia, for you and your family, what's been the hardest part of the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's so, you know, my kids actually are okay with it. I think they're much better with being home than my wife is because she's at home, you know, making sure they're getting their homeschooling. They love doing the homeschooling because they're typically done with their schoolwork in 3 hours.
Nice.
And then they can get on the PlayStation and talk to their friends. I think it's been tough in our community. We have a pretty close-knit neighborhood. We tend to celebrate every major and minor holiday, and we have get-togethers a lot. That's been tough, I think, for our kids and for our neighbors. You know, my wife was telling me it's gotten real for her now because they closed down the neighborhood the tennis courts. And, you know, so those are kind of things like nice outlets for her. You know, I usually come home, she goes and plays tennis because she needs to get away from the kids for a while. And those kind of things are lost. And obviously, we're trying to do our best in our neighborhood because all of the restaurants have turned into drive-thrus. And we're trying to support all our local businesses as much as possible and ordering food from them to try to keep them going. So it's been tough because, you know, in our neighborhood, prom has been canceled. You know, you can imagine being in high school. I don't know. Maybe you didn't have a prom date. I don't know. But you can imagine how difficult that is. I'm assuming a good-looking guy like you, you probably had tons of girls that were interested in going to prom with you. So I can imagine that's tough. And, you know, they're talking about the cap and gown, you know, commencement events are going to be canceled. You know, the big NCAA tournament that was a big deal is going to be held in Atlanta this year. And that's a big deal for the vendors and all those people that make money on it. So it's been tough, you know, in the city and a lot of the people that rely on that new economy to work. So.
Well, Dr. Sidonio, before I let you go, it sounds like you're still quite busy during this time, but is there anything that you are finding time or hope to find time to do during this slower paced life that we're moving into?
Yeah, I mean, it's good. Part of it's good. I mean, one of the things that we've talked about is the basic science labs have all stopped. So any hemophilia research that's conducted in the basic science lab is basically stopped right now. Mm. It's considered non-essential. You know, we all consider it essential, but clearly it's non-essential in this situation. And clinical research is outside of a pharmaceutical trial has come to a screeching halt. And so those are the kind of things that are tough. And so one of the things my colleagues, Dr. Meeks and I, we felt like the mean parents when there's like a snow day. We were giving assignments for research projects that we've sort of had on the back burner or on the shelf, you know, case reports, different papers that need to be written. So we're doing those kind of things. I know that's a nerdy way of spending time, spending our free time. But, you know, I'm probably going to up my number of ukulele lessons just to help with some of the anxiety that we all have, you know, dealing with this, because it's tough. You know, unfortunately, they have so much information. Like, I don't know if you've seen the Johns Hopkins map with the coronavirus. Yeah. I shouldn't be looking at that, but I look at it like multiple times a day. And right now we're at 7,800 cases and 118 deaths in the United States. And so, yeah, I mean, one of the things is great is, you know, the meditation app, I forgot the name of it, is offering free services for providers to make sure we sort of take care of ourselves.
Good.
You know, trying to, you know, that's a nice thing. And we do have a Peloton bike at home. My wife has. And so I've actually been getting on that more often. I think that's been helpful.
Oh, do you now? Well, I'll have to let you know, Dr. Yeah. Sidonio, as a former Fly Anywhere flywheel user who recently, as Flywheel closed its doors, got a Peloton bike. When we get offline here, you let me know that handle and I'll see you on the Peloton universe. I'll see you on that leaderboard.
I actually saw, so I did my first one yesterday or the day before, and we had the same situation because Flywheel, I guess, was sued and we got a free refurbished Peloton, you know, perfect timing. And so my son likes to do it, but he likes to watch The Simpsons while he's on it. He doesn't like all that motivational stuff that he says. So.
Homer's plenty of motivation for him.
Yes, that's he prefers the satire of The Simpsons to motivate him. So.
Dr. Robert Sidonio, pediatric hematologist and oncologist from Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, thanks for giving us some time and sharing your insights. And good luck with the ukulele lessons. And maybe I will see you in the Peloton universe.
I know. And we're going to have to, we'll have to get some hair tips next time. So, because you rock the man bun much better than I do. So, our hair may be down to our ankles because we won't be able to get haircuts for a long time. So,
thank you to Dr. Robert Sidonio, to NHF COO Don Rodolini, and to Natalie Rose, my wife, for joining me on this Bloodstream Mini. And thanks, Natalie, for providing some levity and starting a book club. You can look up Natalie Rose, the French spelling, T-H, on Facebook if you want to join her book club. And thanks, as always, to Takeda, our presenting sponsor, for making the Bloodstream podcast possible. Visit bleedingdisorders.com to learn more about them fellas and all they do for the Bleeding Disorders community. Thanks, Takeda. Subscribe to the Bloodstream podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and tell a friend who you think would enjoy the show. Or maybe even a particular interview, like the one from Monday with comedian and author Zach Anner, or the Bloodstream Mini from last week with comedian and Lyme disease survivor, which does feel like an appropriate word to use given her story, Natasha Chandel. There's a new episode of Cheat Codes, a sickle cell podcast, on Monday, Friday, March 20th, new Ask the Expert on Monday, March 23rd, and you can learn more about Bloodstream Media podcasts by going to bloodstreammedia.com, looking up Bloodstream Media on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or tracking me down, Patrick James Lynch, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Shout out to all the committed LinkedIn users in the audience. Thanks for listening. My name is Patrick James Lynch, and until next time, take self-care of yourselves. Bye, everybody. Stay safe. Wash your hands.